Welcome to The Ultimate Guide to Partnering. In this podcast, Vince Menzione, a proven industry sales and partner executive, brings together technology leaders in this forum to discuss transformational trends and to deconstruct successful strategies to thrive and survive in the rapid age of cloud transformation. And now your host, Vince Menzione.
Welcome to The Ultimate Guide to Partnering, and in this episode, I interview William Llewellyn, the Senior Manager for National Cloud Partner Sales in Microsoft North America's partner business. Microsoft's Cloud Solution Provider Program is the future of how Microsoft enables partners to service their customers while delivering on the mobile-first, cloud-first strategy set by CEO Satya Nadella. In this role, William gets to marry his passions for working with partners and business model transformation to lead this initiative for the United States. William, welcome to the podcast.
Hey, it's great to be here.
It's great to have you on our podcast today. And for our listeners, in simple terms, what is your role at Microsoft?
So my role is to lead the cloud solution provider or CSP business for the US specifically. Essentially, I'm just trying to help our partners be as profitable as they can be in a cloud services-based world.
So for our listeners that don't know, what is a CSP, Cloud Solution Provider, and what does the program entail?
So the Cloud Solution Provider program is a number of things. First and foremost, it's a new licensing model and program that essentially allows any partner who wants to resell Microsoft Cloud Services as part of their overall solution to be able to do exactly that. And it gives them a recurring revenue stream as they maintain and grow that client over time. There's built-in margin for them on the underlying software licensing.
And how does a partner qualify to become a CSP?
The great news about that is that anybody who wants to participate really can. We have two different models. You can either work kind of directly with Microsoft, which means you procure from Microsoft software licensing for resale. Or you can work with one of our 12, some people would call them distributors. We think of them as indirect cloud providers. And they offer not only our solutions, but third-party solutions, marketing assistance, loyalty programs, credit, et cetera. So partners, depending on their level of sophistication, risk, how much of the workload they want to take on themselves, will determine which way they go. But essentially, anybody who wants to participate has a path to do so.
Is there a set of best attributes you look for partners to be part of the program?
Let's see. I would say that the most important thing is to really know your business and what you want to be. And that sounds probably pretty preachy or philosophical, but I think what a lot of partners are finding is especially partners who've been primarily involved in professional services businesses primarily, is that moving into a subscription-based month-over-month growth where you're doing transactional billing to a lot of customers monthly and managing credit is a lot of new muscle. And I think partners really need to understand, how much of that they want to bite off. So I don't think there is a right or wrong answer. I just think that partners really need to think about what piece of the puzzle they want to provide and differentiate themselves around.
And how many partners do you currently have in the program?
We now have over 6,000.
Is that just in the U.S.?
Yep, that's just a U.S. number. 6,000, yep, that's our latest number.
And so how do you programmatically reach out to that large a set of partners? That's a pretty significant number of partners to support.
Yeah, it is a really impressive number. I'd mentioned the indirect model or kind of distribution before. 90% of our partners participate through the indirect model. And so those are very large scale providers and that they become essentially a megaphone for what we're doing with the program. So they take what we're doing, they add in their own components, and then they communicate that out through, a variety of communication vehicles that they have. And generally, to all of the partners in our ecosystem, we do our own blogs, partner readiness calls, kind of our general go-to-market activities where we engage with partners.
And so the 12 that are, I guess you would call, or used to refer to, I think, as first-tier partners, I believe was a term that was used once in the past. I'm not sure if that's the current term.
Yeah, so we used to call them two-tier, and now we call them indirect providers, but you're correct, there are 12 of them.
And who might some of those names be, if you don't mind sharing? So, you know, if we have partners that want to engage through them, who would they reach out to? Who are some of the names?
Sure, absolutely. They are some folks that most people would think of as our classic distributors. So Ingram Micro, Tech Data, Cenix. We also have Rackspace, Insight, Hewlett Packard, Aero. Those are a few of them. They're all available up on the public website. And I will also make sure that we make that list directly available to you at the end so we can get that out to your listeners.
Great, because we do publish the show notes, and I'll make sure we include that, a link to that in the show notes. Great. Thank you for that, William.
Excellent. Mm-hmm.
So the program is a little over 2 years old, I believe. Is that correct?
That is correct.
How has it evolved, and what lessons have you and other program leaders learned along the way?
Wow. How has it evolved? How much time do we have today?
We've got as much time. You know, we can break this up into multiple segments here.
Yeah, it's been a real fascinating journey. I'll put it I'll play back to you a few different ways. Over the last, I think I looked at it over the last 18 months, the business has grown over 30% each month. So we're talking about a business that's many orders of magnitude larger today than it was 18 months ago. And it's a new business model for us. While the business is growing rapidly, it's something that we're becoming accustomed to as a company. It's different from our other licensing programs. It is a different customer and value, a different customer and partner value proposition for our field to understand and be able to articulate. And it's a, it's a business that has its own metrics, right? We don't talk about year over year growth. We talk about month over month growth. We don't talk about contracts. We talk about customers and users, and we talk about revenue per customer and not contract value. So there's been a lot of organizational muscle that we've had to build, all while riding a train that's going along at 200 miles an hour.
Wow, that sounds like incredible growth. 30% month over month growth, I think I heard you say. That's amazing.
Yeah, for almost 2 years.
And is there a set of, you know, we've interviewed actually one of your CSP partners who's also in the NSP program, Tony Savoyan from SADA Systems recently. And he talked about his journey and the journey to the early days of the cloud and being a launch partner with both Google and Microsoft and some of the challenges that he faced. You know, that was one example, but, you know, are there other examples like that or ideal profiles of partners that kind of get it right and are growing faster than others and out of the 6,000?
Yeah, you know, I would say that one of the things that distinguishes, Tony's team did a great job of this and others in their class have as well, is just having a real clear vision of the offering, because it's easy to kind of get excited about the potential of the program. But at the end of the day, we all have to take the potential of what we're doing and kind of going and sitting down in front of a customer and earning their trust and earning their business. So I think having a real clear vision of what you want to be, what you want to offer. And then I think balancing experimentation with, you know, I think I mentioned before that Microsoft is having to build new muscle. I think a lot of our partners are also having to build new muscle. And so it could be easy to launch something when you don't necessarily have all the parts of the organization, right? So going into this business requires different thinking and sales, marketing, operations, support. And you want to be able to have a good quality connected experience for your employees and for your customers. So I think it's that balance between being very thoughtful and going fast, and then, you know, at least having a clear vision of where you want to go. Now, I'll be honest with you, a lot of people, they start with something concrete and it may not be where they end up, but they start with something and try to make it as real and concrete as possible. You know, something that you could, you know, explain to your grandmother over Thanksgiving dinner about, here's what we're trying to do. I think that those partners tend to be more successful than others who don't define that up front. It may take longer and it takes more work, but I think it pays off in the end.
You mentioned different ways of measuring the business than in the past. And a couple of questions I have around that, actually. First of all, I know that Microsoft operates a very extensive scorecard model to measure organizational performance. And so I want to ask you about what scorecard metrics you track against. And then also tying into that, what are the top priorities or big bets that you have in the business for this year?
I'm going to start with priorities because I think they then the metrics will then indicate or will reflect what those are. You know, three big buckets is we're actively and heavily recruiting partners to be part of what we're doing here. We have a lot of investments around enabling partners to be successful, whether that's understanding what it means to have a managed services practice or what it means to have a certain type of solution offering from a capability perspective. And then activating partners. So taking the excitement and the capability and turning it into go-to-market solution offerings and sales. So recruit, enable, and activate really are the priorities for the business. And the things that we use to measure that then, we look at partner reach, right? So we're measuring how fast we're adding partners who are selling in the program. We look at customer adds and then also individual users, or if you think of it in a kind of a classic telco fashion, as a subscriber. And then, and I mentioned before, we don't look at contract value. We look at revenue per user. So that's also something similar from telecom or from the cable industry is, you know, what's the dollar per user that we're realizing that helps us understand how successful we are at selling up the value chain of what we have to offer. And then, of course, you know, you put all that stuff together and it drives a revenue number that, you know, that we're accountable for at the US level. So recruit, enable, and activate. And then looking at, you know, how many partners are selling, how many customers are we getting, how many end users are we attracting, you know, what kind of revenue they're driving on a user basis, and then the revenue results in aggregate.
So against recruit, enable, and activate, are there resources that you're bringing in to support that? Physical resources, programs, tools? What does that look like for our partners?
Yeah, so there's, you know, we have a lot of engines, as we like to call them at Microsoft. And so there's a variety of resources for all of those. At the most baseline level, the members, people out there in the industry, even if they're just a network member of the Microsoft Partner Network, which network member, it just requires kind of like a sign up. There's not a fee. You get access to content that really goes across all of these, right? So there'll be a ton of information. You know, there's, for example, in how do I build a cloud infrastructure practice, right? There's self-guided learning paths. If you think about it in that sense, there's a lot of stuff that we're doing. There's a business model component that's new, but there a lot of what we're doing is still similar, which is we're still delivering technology solutions to business problems. We're just doing it through a due mechanism. So a lot of the training and things that I'm talking about are kind of core to what we've done as a company. So like I said, there'll be learning paths, there'll be online courses. Obviously, we have training partners who offer different types of offerings, and there's various communities, user groups who do kind of different types of enablement activities. And we invest a lot of money in kind of go-to-market type activities. There's ready-to-go marketing materials that would help, for example, if you built a productivity solution where you could leverage pre-existing content to and kind of localize it or personalize it, if you will, to help grow your business. So those are the overall components. And then for the things that are new within CSP, there's a specific section of the Microsoft Partner Network website. I believe that's aka.ms/CSP that kind of talks to the program. Here's what it means to participate. Here's what the capabilities that are required. Here's what different solution offerings look like. We do through partner briefings, various groups in the U.S. subsidiary go out and talk with partners on a regular basis, either in large scale formats or in roundtables. There's lots of different opportunities to go and find out what's happening. And another thing, to be honest with you, is, you know, forums like this, you know, people who are in the industry and asking what we're up to. You know, there's a lot of folks involved with the program that regularly speak to analysts and press about what's happening. So, you know, there's a lot of good information out there. One thing I will plug is the Redmond Channel Partner Magazine. They've done a lot of really good research about CSP. That's a good place to go to get some primers as well from people who are interested in Microsoft, but you know, don't sit here under the roof here as an employee.
I think we'll also provide a link to that into the show notes. That's great. That's really good advice for our partners. Thank you, William. And I also understand you have a fairly new enablement organization that's been deployed, a fairly significant size organization. Are those resources also available for CSP partners?
Yes. Huge organization, big investment by the company, really to not to look for size, but to look for potential and help to develop potential in partners. So, oftentimes partner management models look at who are the biggest and let's work with them. And that's always important. But this enablement team and different kind of pods that they sit in are really focused on working with partners who have great DNA and want to invest a lot to build really new and leading edge solutions. And a lot of our practice development professionals and architects who work in that business do work with our CSP partners.
When the program started, I believe the primary program was focused in on CSPs in the O365 space. Is that correct?
It was yes and no. It was Office 365 was the first set of cloud services that became available in the new sales program. And yes, that was where we had a big part of our partner ecosystem had experience, had capability, et cetera. So that's really where we started.
And today, what does the program look like in terms of the split on products? Is it, if I was to split out Office 365 and Azure as an example, is it what's the percentage look like of each?
Yeah, so Office 365 is still a majority piece of the business. It's in excess of 80%, and that's obviously come down from virtually 100%, within the last year or so.
So the Azure business is growing then?
Yes, Azure Dynamics, our enterprise mobility and security business, and even our Dynamics ERP business is also part of that as well.
They are part of the program. I didn't realize that.
Yep. And one of the more recent additions was Windows. You can now get Windows Enterprise Editions with all the security and manageability capabilities that you used to be able to only get under an enterprise agreement. You can now get through CSP. So you can license virtually kind of the desktop to the data center through CSP.
Are there any third-party products available through the CSP program?
There are not third-party products available directly today in our sales platform. And we're working on adding third-party commerce capability. But if you were to go to an Ingram, for example, that's one of the benefits of working with them is, right, they have like a portfolio of ISV applications where, right, Microsoft would be one of them. So through those guys who already have a marketplace, you would have the ability to buy other services from other vendors at the same time as Microsoft. And in time, we'll be able to, for people who sell through our direct program, we'll be able to go into the what partner center, which is what we call our kind of management portal, where you add customers and do subscription updates and customer maintenance. Eventually, you'll be able to actually order third-party applications through that experience as well.
So initially, government and education were excluded from the program or not part of the initial launch, I would say. And in one of our recent episodes, we interviewed Michael Batt from the government business to talk about Microsoft Government Cloud. What progress have you made in incorporating these industries, I'll call them, into the program?
Yeah, it's a good question. And they're both hugely important markets for Microsoft. You know, government was a journey. After we released the commercial products, we actually, step one was to have government pricing for those commercial cloud offerings. So we rolled that out probably about a year ago. And the education SKUs, many of which are either free or heavily discounted because of, the market that we serve there, those became available about this time or around midsummer of last year. So I feel like on the education side, that's a pretty complete set of offerings. But we know in public sector, the key thing for us is really making our government cloud services that reside in our specialized data centers that have extremely high levels of regulatory compliance with what the federal government and other agencies say that they need to have to have the comfort of running cloud services. Those, the Azure Dynamics 365, Office 365 versions of those services are coming to CSP. We're going to see Azure before we see the others. There'll be more news on that probably in the near future. But we're on the edge of rolling out those government cloud services through CSP.
Do you anticipate any changes to the program as you enter fiscal year 18, just a short time from now, actually?
Yeah, so I definitely expect it to be bigger. We're doing all we can to make it better. We're going to continue to add, you know, not only cloud services, but we're going to be making improvements in the underlying platform, so it's just easier to work with, you know, if you're running a business on our platform. And I'm not talking about from a technology stack perspective. I'm talking about, you know, from the operational side, and what I had mentioned was Partner Center. So we're going to have more cloud services. We're going to make it easier to work. You know, I guess I would say less friction, more things to sell. So not only in terms of our own cloud services, but we talked about enabling third-party commerce, the ability to have more flexibility in the platform to offer trials, to offer your own unique promotions and discounts within the platform. There will be some capability of doing annual billing that will be coming. We're looking at some things around doing kind of pre-purchase or pre-commit for Azure, as we can do in some of our other licensing platforms. So there's quite a bit that's on the that's in the development and is on the engineering roadmap. So more to sell, more partners in the ecosystem, and that includes partners who I would assume some of whom who are listening to this now are in the business of helping other partners be successful running a CSP business. So it could be a support organization. Could be a third-party ISV who has a billing or management platform that people use. So that whole ecosystem of what I call the kind of complementary partners will continue to grow as well to support the business.
You've got a big event coming up here in July, the what was referred to as the Worldwide Partner Conference, now referred to as Inspire, I believe. July 9th to the 13th, is that the dates?
That is correct, in Washington, D.C.,
So how are you organizing around the event? And you mentioned some of these changes and additions to the program for fiscal year 18. Are they all going to be announced at Inspire?
Some of the things I talked about will be announced before Inspire. I don't have all of the top line messages yet, but I can tell you that we're going to save some of our bigger things for announcement in DC, which will be, I'm excited to be back there. It's always a great place to visit and a great place to have a conference. So we'll probably have, I would say, three or four big things to announce at Inspire about CSP.
We're going to look forward to that and keep our listeners attuned to what those announcements look like.
Absolutely.
So okay. William, 6,000 CSP partners, a Microsoft field organization that's organized around enterprise customers, small and mid-sized customers, and then what we classically refer to as the SMB market. And then, of course, you've got public sector. How do you engage or connect these CSP partners, this ecosystem of 6,000, with a fairly complex field organization?
Yeah, we do it carefully. It's a good question, right? I mean, there's part of doing business with Microsoft. We're a big company, right? And so to be able to align our troops, we have to have a certain amount of structure, which we certainly have. And this is honestly one of the areas which I think has been more challenging for us because we're breaking new ground. And what I mean by that is historically, a lot of our licensing programs really built or had fences around them to fit into one of our neat buckets of, okay, well, for SMB customers, we offer X. For enterprise customers, we offer Y. CSP can and has been sold to every customer segment that you mentioned, virtually every industry that I can think of, 2-3-person shops up to 30,000 person companies. So in some sense, it's challenging how we've historically organized our business and thought about the way that we sell something and where it gets sold. I think that the big thing that we're trying to anchor our field on is really focusing on cloud usage and essentially consumption of our computing services and less on kind of contract value, meaning right over time, you know, I think people are going to pay for what they use, and if they don't use things, they're not going to pay for them. So part of the learning that we get in a CSP world is because it's all pay as you go. There's a continued incentive and a continued need to demonstrate value to a customer, and so really trying to position partners who are operating in this space as people who can help with active usage and consumption. And then doing that with anecdotes and then as well as with hard data. And one of the things I think a lot of surprises a lot of people is the breadth in which we found customers of all shapes and sizes who are interested in the core value proposition that CSP offers. The other thing I'd say we're doing with our field is we're helping them evolve their understanding of customers and kind of moving from just procuring software or cloud licensing to consuming those things more as part of unique bundles or solutions or more holistic offerings, right? So there's market research out there. I saw some recently that came out of our cloud and managed service provider hosting summit that talked about, you know, in the infrastructure, the managed infrastructure space, you know, half of the revenue is coming from the basic infrastructure services and half of it's coming from managed services. So talking about a managed services world, what that means for a partner ecosystem, what it means for customers, and quite honestly, helping everybody understand internally that, you know, customers are really looking for partners more than ever to join them on this journey to the cloud because they know that they need to go. And then oftentimes they don't really know how to get there. And they're looking for somebody to be their trusted advisor and to share some of the risk as well of going to the cloud. And so I think that represents a really great opportunity for our partners, and CSP kind of fits in there really well with how the industry is shaping up.
Have you had partners that have resisted the change? And what has been your advice to some of them?
Ooh, that's a great question, Vince. Certainly, right? Anytime you change things, it really depends on what everyone has a book of business or a portfolio of things that they drive or they're responsible for. You know, some people, you know, I would say it's like some partners who are very resistant to the cloud, right? They knew an on-premise world. And some of it, I think, is really just fear of the unknown, which is normal. We all have that. I think it's therefore incumbent upon us as a company to explain our vision for what the future looks like, to show how we're investing in our partner ecosystem so they know that they're not in it alone, that we're not kind of throwing things over the fence, if you will. And then you have to, in a respectful way, kind of put out there what you think are the benefits and the costs of both taking action and not taking action. We're definitely investing in this view of the future. Our incentives are going in that direction. Our programs are going in that direction. And so partners always want to know how we're investing. And so I do think lining up those investments with where we see the market going is a good indicator for partners of the considerations that they want to make.
You get to see a lot of partners at various stages of growth, a lot of partners that are new on the scene, born in the cloud partners, we've referred to some of them as. Have you had a situation where you thought, I don't get or agree with what this partner is doing, and I think they're going to fail at this model, only to find out that you were wrong and the partner had totally gotten it right? And if you did, how did you react?
Wow, that's a powerful question. Yeah, I'll give you one example. You know, one of the things, and this is there's a short-term and long-term component to this. The ability to resell something, right? Remember back to business school days, right? You learn that the definition of a commodity is something that the only differentiating value is based on the price. What we don't want to have happen is none of us want to be in the commodity business.
Right. I think it was referred to as price elasticity, if I recall, back in economics days, right?
Yeah. So, if someone's only differentiation is I can give it to you for 5% less, that's a downward spiral, and none of us want to be in that business. And I would say that there was some concern on my part originally, where right, we want partners building on and around and extending what we're doing with CSP, and we saw some partners who were just selling kind of the core licenses. And to be honest with you, what I learned from it was, you know, longer term, I do think partners do need to focus on the differentiated value they add. At the same time, there's a lot of core inherent value to a customer in being able to have a simplified purchasing process where one partner provisions the service, manages it, supports it, bills it, et cetera. There's a lot of inherent value in the core design of the program. And so that was, you know, I was thinking really far ahead in terms of what it was going to take to be successful. So, you know, we've seen partners be successful doing that. And now, right, once they have that socket, if you will, secured, it's an opportunity for them to go back and add things on top of or adjacent to those services to make themselves more sticky and relevant to their customers. So it's a one step, two step, three step type process, as opposed to let's just jump to, you know, the holy grail of being at step three. It takes time to get there, and I think I'd actually misjudged that.
I'm going to ask you a similar question in another way. What about a partner that tried and failed to work with your organization? What was the one thing you wished you had said to them to get them on the right path to success? Was there an attitude, a business principle, or a focus? And what would you tell them now if you could?
You know, being self-reflective, you know, I would tell partners to, you know, to be patient, you know, to try to be patient. We are a large company. We don't have as many resources as we would like to have. I can tell you that in my experience working in 6 or 7 years in the partner business at Microsoft, all the people who work in the partner business care deeply about our partnerships and want to help. And sometimes we're just not resourced to do all the things that we would like to do. And so I think that, you know, sometimes the expectation that we possibly may set for ourselves or partners may have is how quickly we can move. And I think being more agile is something that Satya and the leadership of the company has said that we're absolutely going to do better at. So I feel good that we're investing in that area, but I still think we have a ways to go. So I think, having some patience and understanding that we're not going to be able to move as fast as a lot of our partners would be able to.
What's a common myth about working with Microsoft?
You know, it's one that I didn't really get into a few years ago, but a lot of people have never even had contact with Microsoft. And so they may not even realize that there are partner-facing people and there's ways to access them. And so I don't know if that's a widespread myth, but I do know I've heard that from a number of partners over the last few years. And so for your listeners, you know, there's a lot of people in the U.S. subsidiary whose full-time job is to help grow and nurture our partner ecosystem. If you're wondering if there's people out there, I can tell you there absolutely are. And they're all in roles in one way, shape, or form who are intended to help you grow your business and maximize your opportunity in our partnership.
So I want to just ask a general question about the program in terms of the messaging you provide to these partners. Is there anything that we haven't discussed that you would like to say to our partners about the program that you message out in some of these forums that you drive, these regional events, webinars, and the like that we haven't covered so far?
You know, I was thinking, we've talked about what the program is at a kind of like a definitional level, but I like to talk about it to partners as this being a platform for business transformation. Meaning, you know, I think we put something together that creates a opportunity for a stickier customer relationship, creates an opportunity for a recurring revenue stream, creates a platform for greater ownership or more end-to-end ownership of a customer lifecycle. And while we've done that, you know, it's not a guarantee, right? Meaning, so I feel like we've done a good job of putting a platform on the table that will help partners achieve these things. But I also think just like we're going through our own transformation as a company in the industry, you know, a lot of the folks listening to this are going to be doing the same thing. So I think that thinking about do I need to be thinking about how I do sales and marketing in a different way as opposed to, hey, we just have a new licensing program? I think it is really restructuring of your business. So I think that takes time and it takes consideration and it takes thought and it takes checking in with your investors or your board or your business partners. But I think it's a time of uncertainty. It's a time of great opportunity, but also of uncertainty, right? Things are changing very rapidly, and some of the things I've described are very different for how our business has been. You know, make sure that you're aware of what the resources are, and then know that you're going to have to put in that work that you just won't be able to snap into the program, and it's going to change your business overnight, right? It's a journey, and we're going to have to kind of meet in the middle for us to realize the dream that we've laid out.
I remember the term eat while you transform, as was one of the terms we used to use with regards to that. I think that's some of what you were saying here.
Yeah. Well, we all, our business leadership used to perform while you transform.
Perform while you transform, not eat, but yeah, same person.
Perform and transform. So do all the leading edge stuff, and then also make sure that you are delivering against all of your existing commitments and selling what you got on the truck today. That's for sure.
And I think I heard patience a few times, and getting buy-in from the board and from the investor community, whoever might be the stakeholders in that business, because you are pivoting a business and you have to maintain your existing goals and strategy while you transform.
Yeah, one of the things we should definitely include in the show notes, and I've alluded to this several times, is there's a lot of content around the modern partner, around four different pillars, and there's case studies, there's playbooks, there are even like financial models for you to figure out, hey, if you're going to restructure your sales team, here's what it would look like. There's overall cloud profitability modeling tools. There's a lot of really good content. We'll make sure that we include that modern partner content for you.
That'll be great. I'm going to shift gears here a little bit and talk a little bit about William, or ask you questions about yourself and your career.
Sure.
So yeah, let's talk about William at Microsoft. What was one great piece of advice you received when you took this role?
I was told to get comfortable with being uncomfortable. You know, we talked about the massive pace of growth and change, and there's just been no time to hang on to something that felt easy, you know, last month. You know, we're certainly not reinventing the wheel every month, but things are moving so rapidly. And there are a lot of things. This is an incubation business, although it's getting quite sizable. We're creating a lot of these things as we go. So that was really good advice. And I've personally grown a lot about, you know, how to deal with ambiguity. And I've swim in it now. I don't know how well I would do if I went into a more structured job where someone told me the way everything was. But learning how to deal with ambiguity has been a big one that I've learned in this role.
If you were mentoring someone, and you, I'm assuming you may actually be mentoring some people now, but what would be a piece of advice you would give to that person or persons with regards to either working at Microsoft or in your organization?
Yeah, I would give this advice to, let me do two things. Give you advice that I'd give to anybody. And this was advice I got from the person who hired me at Microsoft. You either want to have a job that you really love, or a manager that you really get on well with. You got to have at least one. If you have both, you're really, really lucky. And if you have neither, you're going to be in a world of pain. So I think that stuck with me. And, you know, in this role, I feel fortunate to have both, but I wake up every day truly excited and passionate about what I'm doing with CSP. That creates so much energy that can be used productively in doing what I do. And I think regardless of whatever our passion is in life, however the ability to translate our passions into what we do, given the fact that we spend a lot of our time, awake time in the world, you know, working for a living, is making that something that we really care about. It just creates a whole different dynamic. And so I think that's advice that I'd give to anybody. And maybe for anybody going to working at a big company, it takes a long time to get up to speed. It really does. The first person, the guy who hired me into Microsoft, Joss Vitas, had said, you need to give yourself 6 months. And I thought that seemed like forever. And he was right. And I still learn. I've been at the company now for almost 13 years. And I still learn a tremendous amount just about the company on a daily basis. So being patient, especially going into large companies and knowing that you're not going to figure it all out, you know, straight away.
How did you get started, William? Talk our listeners through it.
So I actually have a business undergraduate degree. I had very practical parents who told me to go to college and study something that I could get a job doing. So I actually have an undergrad degree in accounting, which is a pretty safe profession. So I went to work for Arthur Andersen. And then kind of before I went back to business school, I did a lot of different corporate finance, M&A, venture capital work. I co-founded a software company. I was a CFO of that. And so a lot of work in the accounting and finance space. that's where I ended up leveraging that experience to land at Microsoft as a finance manager, although I've done a lot of different things functionally since then. That experience helped me understand a couple of things, one of which was I definitely wanted to be in the software business. I also wanted to go to a company that was investing a lot of money in a lot of different areas because I see it as a real benefit to go work at one company and be able to do so and remain interested and invigorated over a long period of time if they're working on a lot of different things. So Microsoft fit the bill for me in that regard. And you know, since then I've had the chance to I've worked in finance, I've worked in marketing, I've worked in sales, I've worked in the partner business. So I've had the opportunity to envision what I wanted to do here and then just find the different opportunities to get the different skill sets and experiences that I've wanted to have.
What do you bring forward from your finance background into this role?
Wow. I have just a deep appreciation for the analytical side of things. And there are lots of things that are important at Microsoft, but knowing the numbers of your business are certainly one. And so, you know, doing an incubation business, I will say I was much more deeply involved than other people might have been in my position in terms of just getting the reporting for our business up and going. But it's good. I kind of feel like if you know the numbers of a business, you know a lot about the business. And so I was certainly able to lean on those skills and those experiences in this job.
Who was one of your role models, and what advice or what attributes did you learn from them?
Let me do it this way. I'll tell you a few things that people I've heard of people that have inspired me in different ways. And one of which in the business world was Jeff Immelt, who runs GE. I had the opportunity to see him in a small group environment when I was in business school. And one of the things he had said is, you know, if you find a company out there that you want to be a part of, go get any job that you can to get your foot in the door. And I thought that was really a really different way of kind of talking about if you know what your passion is, just find a way to get to get started with it. And so that definitely inspired me. And that was coming up in a time when I was looking at what my career opportunities were coming out of business school. So that certainly had an impact. I think there's, you know, just from a life perspective, there's so many great inspirational leaders, most of whom I've never met. I think about some of the great icons, you know, Martin Luther King, Gandhi, other political and kind of social leaders who I think the most powerful thing is they lead by example. So oftentimes they're great orators as well, but they also just have such an integrity in what they do. And I find integrity is one of my top values. So I really try to say what I mean and mean what I say. And then, you know, just the value of hard work, you know, looking at grandparents who've gone through tremendous amounts of change. Just my grandfather, excuse me, recently passed away, but I was thinking about, you know, the amount of change that he saw in his life, just had a good attitude, kind of had a good sense of what he could control and what he couldn't control. And then just found a way to, you know, in a non-glamorous way to, you know, in terms of a career, to do something he enjoyed doing, to provide for his family, to have a good quality of life, and to, you know, give back to his community.
Nice. Is there a quote you live by or think of often?
Wow. There's a lot of them, but I'll tell you one and I will butcher it. And maybe we can include this in the show notes as well. It's a quote from Michener. The quote has to do with being the master in the art of living. And it's essentially talking about living a integrated and holistic life. And it's several sentences. And so I might butcher it, but essentially it was people will know when you find that place in your life, people will not know the difference between when you work and when you play. It will just be as it is. And that's one I kind of keep pegged up on my board in my office and look at on a regular basis.
So that's James Michener. We'll look up that quote and we'll include it in the show notes as well.
All right.
So what advice would you give your 25-year-old self?
Wow. I think I would have told myself to take more risk. I think I would tell myself to take more risk, and I think that I understand why where I came from. I came from, you know, a blue collar family you know, really, my family had to be very careful about how we spent money. We were fine. I had everything I need, but it was a very, I would say, a conservative culture in that sense. And there were times early on in my career where I had the opportunity to go do some things that had the potential to be boom or bust. And I tended to play it more safe. And so I think that especially at that age, being at that time, not being married, not having kids, you know, there's really not a ton of downside to doing that, you know, to going out and trying new things. And so I think that's probably what I'd tell my 25-year-old self.
What's one book you've read that you'd recommend to our audience and why?
I would recommend The Power of Now by Eckhart Tolle. It's a blueprint for me. It just essentially kind of talks about, you know, the past is the past, the future is the future. The only thing that we have is right here and right now. And that by learning to operate in that mechanism, we can have a fuller life in all the things that we do. And I've read it 3 times, and I'll probably read it several more times over the course of my life.
The Power of Now. We'll also
include
that.
Power of Now.
Power of Now. We're going to include that in the show notes as well, William. Well, thank you. I think we covered a lot of ground here today, and I'm excited to have you on the program. I think there's a lot of value in the CSP program for our partners. Hopefully, many of them are in the program today, but for those who aren't, hopefully there'll be some good information in this podcast for them to learn how to engage and work with you and your organization.
Absolutely. Thank you so much for having me. This has been a great time.
It's great to have you.
Thanks so much for listening to this episode of The Ultimate Guide to Partnering with your host, Vince Minzione. Online at ultimateguidetopartnering.com and facebook.com/ultimateguidetopartnering. We'll catch you next time on The Ultimate Guide to Partnering.